imposing euthanasia on hospice facilities.
It's extremely traumatic to have to be involved in the application of a euthanasia procedure. It shakes them to the core because they've trained to care for someone and to improve their life, not to take their life.
On the feature this week, an interview on an effort by an ARPA chapter in BC to mobilize the community on the issue of palliative care. In the news, the papers have been filed in an appeal of a court decision on doctors' conscience rights in Ontario, and the so-called attestation requirement for the Canada Summer Jobs Program could now be subject to two court challenges.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
There's going to be an appeal of a January 31st Ontario Superior Court ruling on conscience rights for doctors and other healthcare professionals. In that initial ruling, the court acknowledged that doctors' rights to freedom of religion were violated by a policy imposed by the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario, a policy that required so-called effective referral for patients who want medical assistance in dying. However, the court said those doctors' rights were trumped by the rights of patients to have access to euthanasia, and that doctors who had conscientious objections to providing those referrals would either have to retrain for specialties where the referrals wouldn't be an issue or leave medicine altogether. The Christian Medical and Dental Society, which filed the original lawsuit, filed papers for an appeal last week. The group's Larry Worthen says fundamentally the lower court didn't properly balance the competing rights that were at stake because there were other ways to provide access to patients.
At a certain point in the discussion, they balanced the patient's loss or the patient's concerns with the doctor's concerns. And we provided a whole pile of evidence that said that patients get access without taking away doctors' conscience rights. And we had examples in Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba. We provided all these examples, and the court did not consider those things. They only considered what the college said about how the patients would be negatively impacted. So they accepted the college's facts, and they appeared to have ignored ours. According to the law, if they're going to take away someone's constitutional rights, they have to do it in a way that is the least invasive. They have to choose the least impairing way to do it. And there were less impairing ways to do it that accomplished the same thing in other provinces, and they never considered those things.
When the ruling was first issued, Sean Murphy of the BC-based Protection of Conscience Project said the implications of the ruling were extremely far-reaching because it, quote, authorizes the state to compel citizens to become parties to homicide and suicide. If the state can force people to become involved in killing other people, there's virtually no limit to what it can demand. No word yet on when the court appeal will be heard. Looks like the controversial attestation requirement for the Canada Summer Jobs Program may be going to court more than once. At the center of that controversy is a requirement that all applicants for summer jobs funding have to sign on to a statement vowing support for so-called reproductive rights. Julia Beasley with the Evangelical Fellowship of Canada says the government extended the deadline for applications for the program earlier this month, but ultimately that didn't make any difference.
While they did give this extra time, nothing changed. They didn't change their position on the attestation. The attestation itself remains unchanged and still completely non-negotiable. We know that a number of organizations sent in their applications on paper, and they would have either included some kind of an alternate attestation. Checking off the attestation and then including an alternate that says what they do commit to, what they do recognize, and sending it in that way. Some of them may have sent a request for religious accommodation. And so those organizations are now starting to hear from Service Canada saying your application is incomplete because the attestation was not checked or it was modified or it was qualified. So they have not budged on their position that the only way an application is eligible is if that is checked off, unqualified, and unmodified.
A Toronto pro-life group has already launched legal action. They'd originally asked the court for an interim injunction to nullify the attestation requirement until full arguments against it could be heard. That application was denied, but the main lawsuit is still going ahead. The Canadian Council for Christian Charities, known as the Four C's, has now distributed a template letter to organizations across the country that have been rejected for the funding because they wouldn't sign on to the attestation. That letter talks about asking for so-called religious accommodation. Beasley says those response letters may well form the basis for another lawsuit.
We're in conversation with 4Cs and CLF about this, exploring what our legal options might be, and that is certainly a serious consideration at this point. I think if we were to challenge it, it would likely be on those Section 2 charter rights that are laid out in that letter. So we are looking at how do we begin to collect the data we need to move forward.
We link to the suggested letter from the 4Cs group on our website this week. The Ontario PC Party is in the middle of a leadership race in advance of the upcoming provincial election. Former leader Patrick Brown was forced out of the leadership a few weeks ago amid allegations of sexual impropriety involving underage women. Brown has denied the allegations. He's actually launching a lawsuit against CTV, which first broadcast the story. But the scandal did force him out of the leadership, and now there's four candidates vying to replace him. They are Carolyn Mulroney, the daughter of the former Prime Minister, Doug Ford, brother to former Toronto Mayor Rob Ford, former Deputy Party Leader Christine Elliott, and a relative newcomer, Tanya Granick-Allen. She's the former president of the parental rights group, Parents as First Educators. Allen's campaign is centered largely around scrapping Ontario's controversial sex ed program and around the issue of parental rights generally.
People are excited that I've put my hat in the ring because they know I respect that families should ultimately be able to make the decisions that's best for them. You know, we call that sphere of sovereignty, that religious institutions, that churches should make those decisions what's best for their church, and they don't need the government interfering. So I think my whole philosophy and my view on life and the way I see how the government interacts with families and religious institutions and private sector, I think that will set the tone for my administration.
The deadline for members to sign up so they could vote in the leadership race was last Friday. The actual leadership vote is scheduled for March 10th. Back with more after this.
ARPA's Gun and Government event in Ottawa is coming fast. This year on April 18th to 20th, this signature three-day event provides Reformed Christians with the opportunity to meet with parliamentarians and to train and strategize with other Christians. There are a limited number of spots, so be sure to apply early. Final application date is less than a month, March 17th. For more information and to register, go to arpacanada.ca/GG18.
And we're back on the program. A big meeting in Langley, BC earlier this month, organized by the local ARPA chapter. The meeting was to oppose the introduction of medical assistance in dying, doctor-assisted euthanasia, into the community hospice facility there. Tamara Jensen is with the Langley ARPA chapter. She helped put that meeting together. Hi, Tamara.
Hi.
So I guess I'd start by asking you, first of all, what prompted ARPA to put this meeting together?
Well, you know, it's actually really interesting. Our company had actually done a reasonably sized donation to the Langley Hospice over Christmas, and I suddenly heard that they were going to be having maid services put to use there in Langley Hospice. So, of course, we were kind of shocked and we thought, well, I better call Langley Hospice. I had told them that we were going to support them next year. And I thought, well, with that going on, there's just no way. So I ended up calling and talking to Nancy Panchuk. And she ended up saying to me, I am so glad you called because I need you to tell the papers that you are going to withdraw your donations because of this. So that night, we had our Langley ARPA meeting. And I mentioned that this was happening, and I was asking, what do you think? Like, these poor people, they're looking for help to get the news out that this is happening and it's been forced on them. What if we call a meeting? And just through a whole bunch of different circumstances, we were able to get Mark Warawa, our MP, on board, and we were able to get Mary Polak, the MLA from this area. Rich Coleman gave us a statement, and all of them were basically saying, we need to keep this out of hospice.
So fundamentally, what are we talking about when we say we need to keep this out of hospice? What has changed? There's a new policy that applies to non-denominational hospice programs. I'm not even sure what that means. What's the distinction here? Are there denominational hospice programs that are exempt from this new policy or what?
That's correct. So faith-based hospice have actually been exempt, which of course is also a little bit controversial. People are already complaining, well, that's discriminatory. But in the past, what was happening, euthanasia had come in already last year. And what had happened here in the Fraser Valley anyways, is there was a specific place set up for these procedures, if you would, in Delta. And so patients were being transferred from wherever to this particular location in Delta for this application of an injection. What changed, I believe, is the NDP came in, and we also have a new board chair. I understand Jim Sinclair, he used to be a union boss, And they basically have said, we are no longer going to transfer patients because it's just too traumatic for them to have to move. And so now hospice will have to allow these procedures to happen in hospice. Now, the challenge is hospice is very much a place where patients are going to have a good ending to their life. We don't prolong it, but we also don't shorten it on purpose. So the biggest change is now we're actually being told, no, you actually have to apply these lethal injections to your patients. And so that's, yeah, it's morally repugnant for most of us, and that's why we would want to withdraw our personal donations even for that.
I understand one of the top people within the hospice group there or in Delta or someplace, I'm not clear on the specifics, but has resigned just before Christmas when this directive came out?
Yes, correct. There's a Dr. Neil Hilliard in Chilliwack. He was actually head of hospice for Fraser Health. And he did resign because they were going to force this on hospice. And the concept of ending someone's suffering through actually dispensing with their life is just absolutely abhorrent to most of us. And he just couldn't see his way clear to continue working as the head of hospice if he was going to have to force that on others.
So what prompted this change? I mean, you talk about Jim Sinclair says it's inhumane to take people and put them in an ambulance and haul them to Delta to do the deed there. When they could just as easily do it in whatever hospice they're in Langley or some other community. Was this specifically tied to the change in government in BC? How did the previous government handle this?
You know, it's hard to say. The previous government did allow for transfers. So it does appear that this has come about because of the change in government and perhaps also the change at Fraser Health in the board structure. But in the end, we have very limited resources at hospice. So for instance, in Langley, we have 10 hospice beds. And they receive very little funding from the government. And now the government is taking what very little resources we have to support families at this very difficult time in having, you know, a good death where you're taken care of, you feel safe, you have time together as family to be able to reconcile perhaps. And they've said, now we're going to take your resources and we're going to apply euthanasia. And then it's very cheap for them to do it that way.
There seems to be a lot of uptake to the assisted suicide piece in BC. In the broader context, the Coroner's Service published some stats late last year that had 744 deaths by MAID, medical assistance in dying, from January of 2016 through the end of last October. Close to half of those were on Vancouver Island. Proportionately, they've got a larger number of retirees and old folks there. Victoria leads the country per capita when it comes to people who want to end their own lives with the help of their doctors. In that context, it would almost seem that this policy from Fraser Health would have some considerable public support. How do we counter that narrative?
Well, I think what's most important to understand, and I think Dr. Hilliard and a number of other palliative care professionals have made it very clear that often there is an option for these patients which are seeking euthanasia. And often it's because they are suffering, but they don't have a purpose for their suffering. So if you're able to find out, you know, what is your concern? Why are you asking for this? You can often actually find them a solution. Perhaps they're in a lot of pain and the doctor can actually find some sort of a prescription that can ease their pain. Perhaps they feel like they're an economic burden on their family and you can have some conversations with the family and they can reassure the patient. No, mom, no, dad, we want you with us. We love you. You're no economic burden.
So what's next in this campaign, specifically in the context of Fraser Health? Realistically, what are the chances that this policy can be changed?
It's really challenging to say. I know that Mary Pollack was suggesting that we all begin by doing a bit of a writing campaign. So each one of us let our MLA and our MP know that hospice is not a place where people go to die. Hospice is a place where people go to be cared for until their natural death. A lot of people have no idea this is being imposed, and actually a lot of the healthcare professionals seem to actually feel very much alone, like they are the only ones who are against this. And the challenge for the doctors, nurses, is that it's extremely traumatic to have to be involved in the application of a euthanasia procedure. It shakes them to the core because they've trained to care for someone and to improve their life, not to take their life.
Tamara, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, lighthousenews@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.